Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Driveline Podcast, your official podcast for the South Dakota Auto Dealers and South Dakota Trucking Associations. My name is Christine Vinatieri-Erickson, your host today for Driveline. Today, I have a special guest with me, Senator Steve Colbeck out of District 2. Thank you, Steve, for joining me. It is campaign season, and so I love having some legislators on. Steve's fairly new to the legislature, but not new to politics. Steve served in the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission from November 2006 to 2011, as well as the Brandon City Council. And he is a state senator out of District 2, Brandon area, and currently is the principal manager at Xcel Energy. So welcome, Steve. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, so we like to keep it casual. We're going to talk energy. We're going to talk your background. We're going to talk about whatever comes to mind. First off, you know, I'm a recovering politician as well. You are still in the thick of it. Talk to me a little bit about why politics. Why'd you get involved in the PUC, the city council, and now the state senate?
No, that's a great question. A lot of people ask me that. So years ago when I was living in Brandon, it was about 2001 when I first started, I just had an interest in it. My brother-in-law was actually in politics too, and I really respect him. His name is Mike Wilson. He's out in Rapid City, and he just kind of had a passion for it, and so did I. I ended up getting asked to Dash Pack. I don't know if Tom Daschle actually did a recruitment thing. Actually, Governor Noem was there years and years ago. So it was kind of a bipartisan thing back in the day. And they recruited kind of younger at that time. I was much younger, members who had done city council and maybe county commission work and encouraged them to do things. So at that time, I was actually going to take on a sitting PUC commissioner, and he ended up resigning. And one thing led to the next, and I got elected. So you can call me landslide. I won by 3,000 votes.
Because it was the only votes.
Exactly.
That's awesome. I love it. You know, and I think what a lot of times, you know, if we have listeners outside of South Dakota, people don't realize that we are not career politicians in South Dakota. We have real jobs. We have real life stories and families and businesses, that we are truly a citizen legislature that makes us unique. And I like that because they come with different experiences. And so, you know, just having my time working with you, being with Xcel Energy, I think brings a really unique perspective, having that voice for the energy companies of somebody that actually understands energy. It's just different, you know. I mean, and we have all kinds of people. We have nurses and attorneys, and you know, we've got truck drivers, and we've got all kinds of demographics within our legislature. And so what I appreciate having you new to our legislature is you're my go-to guy for energy. You're my go-to guy where I'm like, oh my gosh, help me understand the way this works in industry, and what are those repercussions if we do bring some sort of legislative change. So I want to talk a little bit about, and we're going to go back to your politics in a little bit, but I want to talk about energy. And you know, EVs are mandated by federal government. We know how much we love mandates in South Dakota. We don't. And so it's creating some challenges in South Dakota. It's creating some challenges nationwide with those mandates of EVs. And we're just not seeing the adoption that we have before. So talk a little bit about the grid, what you're seeing from an energy standpoint, and really some of the changes that you've seen within the legislature with that as well. Sure. So talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say legislatively, first of all, probably the biggest thing is that roads and bridges, as you know, are funded by the gas tax, right? So pretty soon you invent a car that doesn't use gas. So who's going to fund roads and bridges? So something to be aware of. There was some legislation a few years ago. I think it was Mark Willardson had brought that. And then they ended up with a fee of like $40. And that was supposed to go in and kind of replace that. One of the clunkiness of the legislation was that are you driving a Ford F-350 or are you driving, you know, a Prius or, you know, a Honda Accord, I should say, you know. So different miles per gallon is going to depend on how much tax you've actually paid through the year. And they couldn't come to an agreement on how much that should be. So I think they ended up on $40. So we'll have to keep an eye on that. It's, again, as you said, it's changing things all over the world, electric vehicles. And I think for the most part, they're kind of scaling back the full electric and kind of going to the hybrids.
Yeah.
Which, you know, if they would ask South Dakotans, years ago, everyone would have said that. But it's like, yeah, you're probably gonna have to have both, and everybody kind of agreed that, well, if I, like, my wife is a teacher and she works four blocks away. So yeah, we could probably have one electric vehicle and never buy gas for that car. And maybe it drives 20 miles a day, maybe less than that. But for me, I'm going to Pierre and Rapid. I got a trip to Des Moines. This last week, I was in Pierre and back. I'm going to Rapid and back. And then I have to go to Minneapolis and back on Wednesday. So it's just not going to work for me,
No, it
driving an
doesn't.
electric vehicle.
It doesn't
And
work for me.
that comes from someone who works in the electric industry. I mean,
Right.
we have bucket trucks, we use diesel fuel, we've got all of that type of stuff. So we get it. I think there's a kind of a perception that people in the electric world want electric vehicles, and that's not necessarily true. It's a
Yeah.
lot of work to get that done.
Yeah, and the infrastructure just isn't there yet. I mean, it's
No, it's
just not
not. And
there.
probably the biggest thing for us, we're in the business to sell power, right? So if you want power and we know you're going to buy power, we're going to sell you power. Just like
Right.
the supply and demand of cars goes up and down, and we have to adjust to that, and you have to adjust to that. But for us, it's more of a design phase right now. That's really a struggle. How big are the transformers behind the house? As the use in a house goes up, that changes the science of it. That changes the engineering of it. And that's really where the biggest kind of struggle or hurdle is right now.
Right. And as some people are putting in charging things in their home, so to speak, we'll see a higher demand for the home as well. But also there are some dealerships and some businesses that too are having public facing charging components, and we're seeing more of those pop up. But again, we're just not clamoring to putting those out yet if there's not a use.
And the thing that gives us a little bit of pause is that some houses have batteries and some houses can have solar panels. So while the usage goes up, and then all of a sudden they maybe install something and then it goes down again. So all of a sudden you've overbuilt your system, which is capital intensive, and then all of a sudden you can't cost recover on the other side. So, and not to be so I've been on the city council, so I'm familiar with enterprise funds and municipal electrics. And then I actually spent about 25 years in telecommunications on the co-op side. And
Oh,
now I've
wow.
been about 10 years on the investor-owned utility side. And there's quite a difference between the three of those.
Yeah.
And so I'm not trying to be biased one way or the other, but I think those things are not unique to anyone. Everyone is having those troubles, whether you're municipal, an IOU, or a co-op.
Well, and let's talk about the three different types of utilities, because to be honest, I think most people flip their light switch on and want the lights to come on, or flip it off and want them to go off. I mean, I think that the utility system, there's so much detail behind it. And again, I think most people don't always understand it and how those rates, how the rates are made and how they're different. So let's talk a little bit about the three different types of utilities from municipal, cooperative, and investor owned. And just, I mean, just maybe educate our listeners a little bit about what that looks like, because they're all business. Every single one of my members owns a business or works in a business and or lives in some sort of house or apartment. And so I think it's interesting to just kind of educate what those three utilities look like.
Sure. No, that's a great question. Yeah, because you might have your dealership is in a municipal, and then you go live in the country and you might have a co-op. Two different bills. They all kind of look alike. People think that you can take your usage and then just divide it by how much you paid, and that's what your price per kilowatt hour. And it's kind of true, kind of not. But we'll just start with municipalities. So a municipality originally was in years and years ago, people smarter than us decided that municipalities are a good idea because there were some rural areas and some communities who just couldn't get electricity to them. And we're talking like back when electricity first started. So it's kind of hard to fathom how it
Right.
all came about. So they started their municipal electrics. And over time, it makes perfect sense that your water treatment plant, your city shop, all of those, the sewer treatment plant, makes perfect sense that all of those are fed by municipal electricity because that helps the entire community.
Right.
Over time, municipals have kind of grown, and then they have their own set of rules on rate making and kind of internally though. So they're called enterprise funds. So a sewer fund, water fund, electric fund, and you can't borrow in between those funds unless that fund is debt free. So some municipalities will just make up the numbers. Say they make $1 million on their electricity, then they can run that over into the water. Still is divided amongst all of the users, still is a benefit for the community. So that's
Right.
kind of the premise of municipal electrics. There
And how
are
many municipal electrics do we have in South Dakota approximately? I won't put you on the spot and name them or anything, but it, you know.
no, yeah, I'd say over under probably 100. You know, I would say right in there. I can't remember the exact number. Some of them are really tiny. Sioux Falls is probably the largest in the state, I think, and that's like 2,400 customers. So you're not talking huge numbers. Xcel Energy, for example, we have 105,000 customers. So the size and scope of scale is much different. Some of the struggles for municipalities right now is frankly labor, just like everyone else. Linemen make good money. I mean, if you're a lineman in Xcel Energy, you're making over six figures with overtime and everything like that. That's becoming harder and harder on a municipal level
To
because
afford.
they're smaller and smaller. So just like kind of a larger dealership, smaller dealership, you know, same kind of economies of scope and scale. So their electricity comes from supplemental power providers because they are a municipal and a tax entity. They're the ones who get actually the power from the dams and the federal government. And then Western Area Power Association, that's called WAPA, that's where they kind of get their power from. And then sometimes, like Missouri River Energy, they actually, that's where my son works. He's an energy scheduler for them. But then all of those municipalities, those linemen work, and then they're kind of a contract subcontractor. Heartland, they're a supplemental power provider. So they've got allocations. And then they give them out to municipalities. So a little bit different, very complex, but they serve a need and do a good job. So now we move to cooperatives. I think everyone's pretty familiar with cooperatives. One member, one vote, right? So if I'm a member of a cooperative, I have a vote. I can go there just like a municipality. I'm a citizen. I can go to the city council, and the city council is going to dictate the rates. That's where all of that happens. And theoretically, they could change rates in a meeting if they wanted to. They don't, but they could. So, cooperative, same thing. They have that board, elected officials. That's where rate making authority is. It's with that board and the general manager. So, their electricity is actually three different scales. Basin Electric in South Dakota. Basin Electric generates electricity. East River Electric. Transmission is the transmission level, and then the cooperatives are just the distribution. So Basin generates it, East River gets it to their house or gets it to the business, and then Sioux Valley distributes or a cooperative distributes it. So that's a little different. And then we move to an investor-owned utility where we own the top to the bottom. We own nuclear power plants at Xcel Energy. We own coal plants. We own wind. We own solar. We own all that. We own all the transmission, and then we own all the distribution. Our rate making authority comes from the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission, and the
Which you
reason
served
that
on,
is,
right, for many years.
yeah, am I? I'm probably getting a little windy here, but so the reason that is because not everyone can own stock in our company. So cooperative, one vote, one person. Municipality, one citizen, one vote. Investor-owned utility, I can't afford to own Xcel Energy stock, so rate-making authority is transferred over to the Public Utilities Commission. That's why that all went
That's
down.
very interesting. And it has to be approved in front of the Public Utility Commission in order for that, which is not always easy to do. It's a hard case, and I've seen that happen. And you know, it has to keep up with infrastructure. We love, you know, we don't want in South Dakota to have high rates or any of that and on the backs of the citizens, but it obviously has to make sense to be able to pay for the infrastructure and the capital and overhead and all of that. So it's an interesting case to be pitched in front of them to have it be increased when needed. And you know, with all of the potential of the infrastructure and build out, you know, there has been an increase here and there to make sure that those are covered and that the citizens are not having outages. And that's what's important. Yeah.
And that's, each section has advantages. So one disadvantage is that sometimes we deal in small things with a big company.
Mm-hmm.
And then now, like a co-op, you can deal with small things with a smaller company or municipality, same thing. The disadvantage is that the economies of scope and scale are lost, right? So we have 8 states. So if we have trouble or storms or anything like that, last time we had a storm, we had 3,200 linemen come to town to help us fix it within 48 hours.
Right,
so
right.
That doesn't happen on different levels.
Right.
So outages sometimes get longer. The other advantages of an investor-owned utility is just we own all of our generation. So in a different, like a co-op, they're kind of dependent on basin to make sure that they're making the best economic decisions to make sure that they're selling the cheapest electricity, whereas we control that.
Right.
So, and then that's approved through the Public Utilities Commission. So
right.
It's a, like you said, it's a year-long forensic audit. Costs well north of $1 million to file a rate case. Some people are like, well, why don't you go every year for a small increase? Well,
because it's very expensive.
It costs $1 million. So
right.
That's why we try to stay out as long as you can and then go in there and then adjust and
have it make sense. Yeah.
Most investor-owned utilities, their goal is to stay at or below the rate of inflation.
Right.
Just keep it low. California is probably paying close to 30 cents a kilowatt, whereas we pay, closer to 10.
Wow.
So yeah, it's quite a difference.
Yeah. Well, and we don't like to compare ourselves to California very often. True. Anyways. It's usually, we compare ourselves to California in the sense that, hey, we're doing a better job, so
right.
to speak.
Right. Yes. We are getting a lot of that and we're seeing that. And kind of back to the electric vehicle thing, that was kind of the hot item and that's where all the demand was going to go. Recently, I would say within the last 12 months, that is kind of, they've dropped about third on the list. The biggest thing right now is data centers.
Really?
Yeah. The artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
Amazon has publicly came out and said that they need 30 gigawatts of power in the nation.
Wow.
So it's very conceivable that the Midwest, North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, Nebraska, Montana, will probably see probably 3 to 5 gigawatts of new demand in the next decade.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just because of AI.
Yeah. Well, and I think that the AI conversation is, oh my gosh, probably a whole nother podcast for another day, but
for sure.
Just not even realizing that the impact that has on our energy, I think is, enlightening for you to even bring that up. So it's very fascinating that that would go in front of the infrastructure for EVs.
Yeah.
It's,
I would say EVs are, if I would just spitballing of 1 to 10, I would say EVs are probably a 5. Data centers are probably a 9.5.
Wow.
Minimum acreage, 300 acres, anywhere from 200 to 300 and some acres they want. Huge, huge supercomputers. Wow. You remember in the legislature, we just did that bill about getting some money to, for supercomputers?
Yep.
Kind of what it is.
Yeah. Well, and I think it took 2 years to get that passed because I think the first year was a little bit of a struggle. And then this last year it did pass.
Yeah. The biggest thing that everyone always kind of coordinates it to is chat GPT.
Yeah.
That was kind of what, nobody heard of it. And all of a sudden, boom, everybody heard of it. And, that is just the tip of the iceberg. And we've got our AI summer study. I'm co-chair of that with Representative Wisegram. So it's going to be very interesting.
Yeah. And I think that will, once you all are concluded with your AI summer study, I think it would be interesting to have even you and Wisegram back on the podcast saying, hey, what'd you learn? What's changing in South Dakota and how is AI going to impact business and our daily lives, education, you name it? How is that going to impact South Dakotans? So we'll have you back on for sure with that too. And we'll get Wisegram as well. So let's talk a little bit, smart meters. I don't think everybody understands what that is. I'd love for you to just give a little highlight on where we are with that, how that makes it better and what the advantages are of that, and maybe how it impacts business.
Sure. So The whole goal of a smart meter is to get more control into the customer's hands. If you want to save money on electricity, I want you to be able to save money on electricity. So we have different programs like LED bulbs and, you know, for larger businesses, you know, you can get lighting rebates and saver switches where you can shut your air conditioner off at high peak times and things like that. AI is just kind of the next step for that. So that is the customer end of it. The business end of it for us is that we can now see exactly where outages are because they're constantly pinging on a network. And then when people call in, we see that, but we can see the dark lights and know, okay, this leads back to here. Right now, we don't see that instantaneous data. So that's probably the largest advantage for us is to hopefully repair outages faster.
So what do you say to folks that, I mean, the conspiracy theorists, what do you say to folks that, I mean, I've heard it and I've seen it on social media and people saying, oh, I don't want smart meters because I don't want people in my business and, you know, tapping into my stuff. And what do you say to folks like that of, here's what it does for you. Here are the advantages. Here are, you know, here's why you shouldn't be maybe concerned about it. And look, we're not going to change everybody's minds, right? I mean, I love the control. I myself have the saver switch and I take advantage of some of these other programs for me and also our associations, because I think it's really important for us to be as mindful of budgets and savings that we can, as well as for the environment and making sure we're not using something we shouldn't. But what do you say to those kind of conspiracy theorists that that are concerned?
Yeah. So first of all, the internal data is already recorded wirelessly. So no one is physically going and looking at your meter now.
Right.
So that system doesn't necessarily change. Now it changes on a how it's communicated. So think of your cell phone. First, we went from LTE to 3G to 5G. So that difference has been made with smart meters.
Right.
It's just a better form of communication. And then the smart meter itself is actually all of the rays and it's not even inside your house. It's outside.
Right.
So that's another kind of layer of insulation that people think that the smart meter is actually producing frequencies.
Yeah.
But it's not. So everything is controlled. Everything has to pass inspection. Everything has to be more safe or not less or more safe than anything else. So I keep my cell phone in my pocket. So those rays and that signal going into my pocket. Right now, you and I communicating have KeloLand TV and KS, Dakota News Now. All of those wireless rays are going through us at this moment. So that little smart meter communicating with a pole, you know, 400 feet away is not your biggest concern, I guess I would say. And we'd have to drill down a little bit farther to just figure out what the true crux of the concerns are. But again, it's not that big of a change as far as how we were doing things. It's just that the meter is capable of more information.
Right. Which is great that as a consumer, I can make some of those choices of what I want to do. And I also think it's helpful that if there's an outage and that information for you all to quickly and swiftly act, I think is absolutely critical as well. So especially if it's cold or hot or whatever, I think it's good to have.
So I have a good buddy. He lives in Valley Springs and he's got a Shouse. He's got like five classic cars and a lift in his garage, and he has his house and stuff. And he actually, when he first built it, he thought his electric bill was high. He's a Sioux Valley Energy customer and they have smart meters. So he can check on his phone. And then he just went around and started shutting things off one at a time. And then he knew what it was. It was the lights in his shop that were LED, but there was a ballast that was, something was wrong with that. So he called the electrician, came back. And, you know, that type of knowledge never existed before.
So you
can, you'll actually be able to tell, you know, if you've got an old clunker refrigerator or freezer, you know, it's like, I've had that chest freezer for 35 years. It's like, boy, you're paying some bills. But, things like that, you'll be able to tell.
Yeah, and I think that's great information too for, you know, our car dealerships and our trucking companies that, again, all have some sort of brick and mortar that they can, you know, have a say in their own
Absolutely.
business. So
Yeah.
that's
And you
good.
know, the part of your bill is fuel, right? So a lot of people think like renewable energy is renewable. It's not. The biggest thing about like wind turbines and things is that wind is free. So I always tell people, if you can drive through Mitchell and fill up gas at 89 cents a gallon, every time you drive through Mitchell, you would, right? If you're driving from Sioux Falls to Pierre, that's where you'd stop and that's where you'd get your fuel. That's what wind is to an electric company. There's zero cost in the fuel. So if we can use it, we use it. Yeah, it doesn't blow all the time. It doesn't work all the time. You got to have some other stuff. But that's the advantage of wind for us anyway. It works for us. So I think that that's kind of a big deal when you get into like the cost of fuel. And that's the same thing with a smart meter. The cost of your running your business and electricity, if you can reduce that, you can make more money and do a better
Exactly.
job.
Yeah, I think that's great. So, legislative session is not coming up for a few months. So you have all this time off and all this free time, right? Kidding. Because we know that's not the way it works when you're elected and you have a job and you have a family. So what is Senator Colbeck working on coming up? What is important to you? And maybe not even specifics, but what is your sweet spot? What are the things that you're watching, monitoring, and working on? We heard the summer study for AI. What else? Where are you spending your time?
So there's some talk about education and budgeting and things like that. We passed some pretty significant legislation last year about teacher salaries. A lot of people are kind of wonder if that's going to do anything, but it will. So two different parts of teacher salaries is average teacher compensation, and then there's a starting wage. Your wage is not your average teacher compensation because you add health care just like any, you know, car dealer businessship. So average teacher compensation has to follow about 98% of after the legislation goes into effect, you have to follow that. So if the legislature was concerned about giving 4% raises, and then some schools would give teachers 2%, and they're like, well, that's
That's
not
not
the
what you
way it's supposed to
intended.
work. Yeah.
That wasn't your plan.
Yeah, exactly. So there's two different ways to fund your school. One is that you pay everybody, you pay the buses, and you run your business, and then you pay your teachers, or you can pay your teachers and then you run your business. And school districts did it different everywhere around the state. So now they have to basically pay their teachers and then run their business. So that is pretty significant change. But that also creates some budgeting constraints. So there's some people wondering, what's the best way we can help these schools plan for next year? So right now you have to make an estimate on how many students are going to come into your district. So Brandon Valley, for example, they estimated 100. They weren't quite on, and then had 120 one year. They were like 70 short. Well, that's 70 students times $7,500, $7,200. So basically, it was almost $1 million shortfall for Brandon Valley School District. In my mind, the issue is that we're making schools guess. So just like property taxes, maybe we should run that a year in the rear. In other words, how many butts are in the seat May 31st? And that's what your budget is set on. And then you run the next fiscal year, and then you know. And then you don't have to. So again,
You don't
Brandon
have to
Valley,
guess.
great, great
I
school
mean,
district.
you're throwing a dart at a board and hoping you
Exactly.
get the bullseye.
Yeah. And Brandon Valley, the school district is a great school district. And I'm not begrudging them, but it's hard. Rapid City, it's super hard. They continually lose students. To get them on some fiscal responsibility plus certainty, I think we need to figure out a different way for that. So I'm
A different path.
noodling on some of those things. And it's just so that's one thing. The AI thing is taking a lot of my time. I actually, to your point about always being on, I have a librarian up in Britain or something that wants to, I got to give her a call back today.
Yeah,
So
it never ends.
yes, carbon pipeline, talking about that. My district isn't greatly affected by the carbon pipeline. I'm more in a urban district, lots of apartments, lots of houses, lots of that. There's not a lot of farm ground in our district, because we're between Brandon and Sioux Falls. And that is mostly houses now. So, but other districts, I'm very, very fortunate that my district is basically the city of Brandon and a little bit of Sioux Falls. But some of our legislators up there are running around five counties, and even like you when you ran, I mean, do you live north of 26th Street and east of Marion Road and da 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 da? Because that's your district, But I don't have a lot of that.
You're
I'm
just
lucky.
there. You've got the city, and I think that's helpful too. I mean, it makes it easier for the citizens to know who to contact, and you're easily accessible because you're not traveling five counties away. You're there and available. So, well, what I appreciate about you is you've always been responsive. Anytime I've needed anything or had a question, I've appreciated that about you. And of course, we always don't agree with everyone, but at least having that conversation with you, I think, is what has made you very a very strong senator, and being able to have those conversations and really just being respectful in that way. It doesn't always work that way. We know politics can get really nasty, and we see it all over the country and world, to be honest. And so it's important to have folks like you that we can talk to. And truly, for our members listening, you have been a champion for the auto dealers and the trucking associations, and very friendly to our issues, which we'll have more coming up this next legislative session. I know you're a car guy. I know that you like your vehicles, and a fun fact for our listeners, Senator Colbeck has had 41 cars in 44 years. Is that right? That's amazing. That's amazing. Now, you do have four children and, a wife. And so let's be honest, he's not capitalizing on, anything outside of it. It's cars are important in our lives, and getting those. So talk to me a little bit. Talk to me about the podcast. We travel to and from here all the time. You got a lot of windshield time. Talk to me about what you're listening to as you're driving.
So yeah, just to clarify, I have six cars in my fleet. So it's not all me. I did just
Exactly. I think that's very important.
So I had I actually just sold a 1971 Chevy C10 that I had. I worked on it and I loved it. But I'm not a body guy, and as they get older, vehicles like that get older, you gotta spend some money on them. And I went to my buddy. I told you about him, who has a Shouse and a lift, and he's gonna do some work on it and stuff. But actually, yeah, I just bought a new truck again a month ago. My wife doesn't like that. I'm just gonna be honest. I'm actually looking at another car right now, but that's another story. But I love to listen to radio. Road Muscle Radio is a podcast. I listen to it on Spotify. It's basically stories about cars and people and just different things. One of them talks about how they did a stunt. They drove a car as fast as they could over a cliff and how they did it. And they tried, they tied up the engine and wanted to know what was going to happen. And then the other one that I really like is VinWiki, VIN as in your VIN number, and then Wiki, like in Wikipedia, VinWiki. Those are just short little stories, and you'll have guys talking about Maseratis and Lamborghinis and Fords and whatever. Barrett Jackson auctions, how they found a car. One of them is about they ran into this old boy who had an old Ford truck, and he wanted to sit, the wife wanted to get rid of it because the husband was getting older, and how they came about a deal and who bought it and turned out to be a barn find. Just, when you got 7 hours, going to pier and back is seven, three and a half, and three and a half, well,
You got to find something. It's either talking on the phone and, wrapping up some business, or just decompressing and listening to your favorite station. So I'll have to listen to those. I've not listened to either one of those, but I will definitely take a listen. I'm always traveling too and have a lot of windshield time, so I think that I'll have to take a listen to some of those stories. I think that will be good.
I also
So
listened to the Dirty Jobs guy. What
no,
I can't.
he's good too.
Yeah, his original ones were like, the way I heard it, And he tell it's almost like the Paul Harvey, the rest of the story type thing. His original ones were, I don't know, maybe 8 minutes, because I have ADHD, like most of us do. It's like I can't, but you get tired of listening to hair radio or the highway or whatever, music, and then it's just nice to sometimes just listen to a good story.
Yeah, I love it. Well, we'll have to take a listen to that. And thank you for joining me today. I think that the information that you provided was really helpful for just businesses. I mean, how does this work? And, like I said, I think most people flip the light switch and they expect it to come on. And all the details behind that is just make sure my electricity comes on. But I think it's so important for us to know how it works, especially as we're using more and more electricity, whether it's for EVs or the new lifts sometimes are taking more energy as well, and what that means on our bottom line for our businesses as well. So thank you, Senator Colbeck, for joining me. And everyone stay tuned. He's up for re-election here coming up. And so we want to make sure that we're supporting our good candidates and those that are friendly to our industry. So thanks for your time today and stay tuned. We'll have you back on again after the AI wraps up. I think that will be a really good topic for us to talk about too. So thank
Sounds
you,
good.
and we will see you soon.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Christine. I really appreciate it.